Welcome to the acoustic guitar seminar, maximizing your contribution. It's a joy to be here, joy to be at the Sovereign Grace Conference. I'll try to navigate the poll for you guys. How many out here, this is like your first worship God? Wow, that's I'm glad you're here. I'm so glad you're here. It's always been, I've been involved since about 2011 or 2010, and it's always been such an incredible encouragement. Such an example of faithful guys doing wonderful work, and men and women. But this is the acoustic class. My name is Patrick Anderson. I currently serve as the worship pastor, assistant pastor at Christ Community Church in Daytona Beach, Florida. And my background before that, I've been there for about 2 years. Before that, I was a professor at Cedarville University in the music and worship department. And before that, I was in Los Angeles with the Enfield crew. You may or may not know who that is. But just at Grace Community Church, John MacArthur's church, some great musicians. David and Ryan actually were playing bass and drums. Part of that for a long time, where I was going to school at University of Southern California for music. Trajectory was just like performance and academic stuff. I'll save you the story. What's up? I'm still there, kind of. Trying to finish up a doctorate. I'm a little bit cynical at this point. I have small children and work, and I'm tired at 7:30 now. So, but I was there, I think I started in 2001, but sort of drug out master's and doctoral work and stuff until the present day. I've taught at Master's College, Westmont College, Cedarville University, USC, some. So, anyways, I want to encourage you as part of the class. There's a lot of us here, so, you know, it kind of can be a little bit unsatisfying at times, because I would love to do like a private lesson with each of you, and I could really find out how I could help you. But just encourage you, if you have any questions throughout, if you have any questions responding to something that we're talking about, feel free, raise your hand. I'll try to keep my eyes up or speak up. And I don't have anything to write on here, but my website, Patrick Anderson Guitar, go to the blog on that. And there's a series that I started kind of out of these. You know, an hour and 15 minutes isn't ideal to like equip you with amazing things and make sure you understand it and kind of own it a little bit before you go back. So I have a lot of blog posts under a series called The Church Guitarist that talk about these things and go a lot deeper on theory, on getting to know the neck, on just little things here and there. And kind of define, like, you know, church guitar. What is a church? It's not like a different type of guitarist. I find, and this is really true in the electric sense too, but with our roles, we don't always have the most time to prepare or the most heads up or even the most direction. And so it's sort of expected that you're just able to do amazing things on the spot, kind of like a studio musician would, really. It's true. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. But if you have any questions, feel free to ask. Again, my website, Patrick Anderson Guitar. Nothing is for sale. The blog is there. It's just church guitar stuff. Then there's some other crazy things too. But my email address is paguitar@mac.com. paguitar@mac.com. If you have questions, if something piqued your interest here and you sort of forget about it when you go home, feel free to get in touch. Happy to. I've dialogued with people via email, Skype lessons if you want to do something like that, but email, text, whatever. So happy to be a resource. It's an expression of just this community around the Worship God Conference and just equipping wonderful, faithful people who are serving where you're serving and stuff. So, all right, so this is called Maximizing Your Contribution. It is a title that I really love because it makes us think about what we do. And before that, I'm reminded, let's just pray to start this off. Ask God to bless it. Father, we are so thankful for the reminders of grace, your mercy, your majesty, your power, attributes of who you are, Father, Spirit, Son. Lord, help us now. Give clarity to this time. Help it to be useful with our meager offerings, with our hands and our instruments. Lord, we want to serve you. I pray that you would equip us to be faithful. Lord, that you would draw us to yourself, make us Make us love you. Help us to love you more. Help us to desire you, to serve you, to serve your people. We ask that you would bless this time. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so identifying your contribution. This is going to be a guitar session. But before we do that, just to quickly mention, our contribution goes beyond our instrument. And you're sort of at the right place. You know, you're already at the Worship God Conference. So I don't need to talk about that kind of a thing. But to not forget that we are worshipers can be kind of a fine line. It can be kind of a hard line not to cross when we're doing musical sort of performance things. So just that encouragement that first we're worshipers, we have a vertical relationship, in a sense, as I wrote it on the outline, horizontal among the people that we're serving with. We are a part of the congregation. Sometimes it's easy for us to sort of feel like we're not, you know, we could play, we go off. Maybe you didn't get breakfast, you could get breakfast. Oh, you're getting later and later, getting back to the sermon and stuff. We are part of the congregation. We serve. we serve with one another. We serve our teammates, all the one another's that would apply, to prefer one another, to love one another, and to really think, you know, sometimes the bar for church musicians, even in our own mind, could be set kind of low, and that shouldn't be the case. But just to remembering these things as worshipers, as fellow members of the body of Christ, these things, I want a guitarist who understands that and can, you know, play at a certain level, more so than I want someone who struggles with that and is amazing. But things we're striving for. And then the musical side, obviously. So cultivating our contribution, don't neglect like the worship aspect of what we're doing, like the real, not just singing, but our lives and, you know, if nothing else, just developing a love for God's word, pursuing him there, that will make you a better guitarist in all the ways that matter. And so, like I said, you're at the right place, so we don't need to spend a lot of time on talking about that. but getting into sort of cultivating what we contribute on the musical side. As acoustic players, we're sort of, how many of you are like the main leaders where you're at? Okay. And how many of you, I guess like the rest of you wouldn't be, but yeah, we're often kind of driving different types of situations even too. We have three different services at the church I'm at, Saturday and then two on Sunday. Saturday night is, sometimes it's harder to get people to play on a Saturday night. I don't know why. But it's often, it's a smaller attendance there, about 70 people. And so we just acoustify everything. And it's just way different. Rearranging songs for that, playing with another guitar player, which brings in considerations and how to, you know, be creative and do some things that add as much fullness as you can with fewer instruments. Two, being the person in the band, maybe driving it, or being the person in the band when the arrangement is gigantic and you're thinking, like, why am I here right now? No one can hear. But thinking, like, what you can do in all these different situations. And so we have, before I jump right into the outline here, are there any, and I could probably fold this in a little bit with what we're going to talk about, but are there any particular questions that you had, things that you struggle with, things that you're hoping to not leave here without, you know, me talking about anything before we jump in?
And I find it helpful to use music stand.
Yeah.
But then also too, this kind of argument was, or just encouragement for me, was to not have something separating you from the congregation. And
yeah.
Maybe having the music stand as a reference, but not as a guideline. The whole time you just stare at the music stand and not.
Yeah. I think there are different aspects of that. And that sometimes these little considerations, like how do I get my pages ready so I can turn and stuff and switch capos and things like that. These are things that make and break your guitar playing, regardless of how good you are. But, you know, even now I usually move the stand as low as it can go and kind of flat too, so that I can sort of do, you know, this. Try to know that, you know, you don't have to. Some people have an issue with memorizing, and I don't feel like as a leader that I can demand that all the gracious, faithful volunteers that I have memorize, because I need them. and I don't want to discourage them. I turn off my professor mode for that. And so we have actually a screen in the back. We added it for choir stuff, but it's helpful for us. But we still use music stands. I know some people want the stage to look a certain way, and it's not that important to me. I try to move it down low. Some people get it way up, and then it's like, you know, it looks like your head. You know, try to get it down and just realize that you probably don't need to look at the music the whole time. And to get out and to be a part of this, you know, as we, Colossians 3:16, as we, you know, we basically speak to one another in songs and stuff, that's what we're doing when we're, you know, even if we're not the leader on mic, you as acoustic guys should be singing. I hope you see the example of many of the people playing and leading up here who are not like the main singers are going to be singing. David the drummer is like well known for just singing, and that draws your heart. It speaks to everybody else too. So that's kind of my thoughts on it. And we all have stands. We have the words in the back too, and I don't know. Whatever serves the people that I'm serving with the best. I'm happy to do that, but hopefully that answered a little bit. But happy to talk more too. And I'm happy if you just want to talk guitar. Like I have free spots. If you want to talk guitar, catch me in the lobby or whatever and let's talk. Anything else? Challenges, troubles, situations? I might not answer it right now, but I might try to fold it in.
Would you use two acoustics in a full band setting?
You could. You could. I wouldn't. Where we're at, I wouldn't necessarily, just because we don't often have that big of a group. Right now, all of our keyboard players graduated from college. We have had no keyboard players for 5 months, which makes you be creative in other ways. But you could. I would then make sure that there's a reason that you have two acoustic players. And you can hear this in recordings, too, where there's like a second acoustic part that doesn't play for the whole song, but adds like, you know, picking textures and stuff, or a higher strumming part. And that's, we'll get into like what to do in that situation and stuff for sure. But you could. As long as you're creative, you could, and intentional, you can do a lot of things. Anything? Scanning. Try not to ignore anybody here. Okay, then let's just jump in. one of the things that I think is key as an acoustic player is to think about our voicings that we use, because that's where we live. We're not often doing like, you know, lead line stuff on acoustic, although that doesn't sound bad, but that's usually somebody else. We're doing more textural kind of rhythm stuff, picking textures, strumming textures, whatever. but to really think about our voicings, because we spend a lot of time there, and I'm pretty confident that I could speak to most of you, and at some time or now or often, you probably found yourself being a little bit unsatisfied with what you're doing. Like, I feel like I do this all the time. G again. By the way, don't let people criticize you for like playing the Christian G or the Christian E. Those are just things that sound great. If you want like the academic explanation, I'll give it to you afterwards. Those open voicings sound fantastic for lots of different styles on the guitar, so no shame in that. and the idea of a voicing is that it's a different way of playing a chord. So like this is a C, and this is a C, and that's a C, and that's a C, and that's a C, and all sorts of other Cs everywhere. Those are different voicings of C, just like we use synonyms, you know, words and stuff. Two things mean the same thing, but they have different kind of, you know, sense to them. So getting used to the world that you live in with voicings, and you'll find, how many of you are familiar with the caged kind of idea? Like, how many of you are masters of the caged? Okay, good. All right, it's just something to be aware of, and we don't have time to spend forever on this, but this, you'll find that you probably play a lot, like, in the key of C. This is a good guitar. Devin Coughlin's guitar. You play in the key of E. You play a lot in the key of E, you play a lot in the key of G, you play a lot in the key of D. And you capo to get those in other places because they have the ringiness and the sound that you're going for. Well, it just works out this way that those, you tend to think in chord families on the guitar. And if you don't, you should. And it's awesome that this actually makes a word that in English. So this idea of C, A, G, E, and D, those represent kind of the parent chords that any chord you kind of play anywhere I was about to say in any style, it's not completely true, but the parent shapes, it's like if you play keyboard, if you know how to play like a C, E, G, that's just the way you play a triad like that on the piano. And this is just what the way that these chords are made in the guitar. They happen to look like C's and G's and E's and D's and A's and stuff. And so these are kind of the big sort of the way chords work on guitar. And you think of these chord groups, like all the chords that go in the key of C, C, F, A minor, G, G, C, D, E minor, and stuff. You think of them as chord families. You'd probably agree that E should start an acoustic session out of tune. Sounds different than the key of G. They're just different tricks in it. You know, I can't get that sound in the key of G necessarily. I can't get that chord is not the same way available in the key of E or with those E shapes moving around. So there are tricks, almost a personality, you say, to these chord families. And there's real value in like digging into that. You might be like, yeah, I know like the key of C. I can play in the key of C. But I bet I could show you chords that you don't know, voicings that you don't know. And it's good to sort of have categorized chords for big strumming, chords that are colorful, chords for your finger-picking ideas, drone chords and stuff. Different categories within these families, and some favor, you know, one idea or another, but just like get to know these families so that you can go to them for a song. And we'll talk about how you can use them for any song. But does that make sense, this idea that there are chord families that you play in whether you know it or not? And those are the world of C shapes, looking shapes. I call them shapes because you can move them anywhere, and it's not always the key of C. A shapes, G shapes, E shapes, D shapes. All of those are different ideas, different colors, have different tricks, have different personalities, walk-downs, hammer-ons, drone sounds, and stuff like that. And you need to sort of mine these, and it's on the website through the blog. There is a packet that I made for Worship God 11 where, among a ton of other things, it goes through these families and gives you, like, has anyone ever used like a chord encyclopedia? And out of the 10,000 chords they give you, it's about 9,998 chords more than you would ever use, because it's like, no, this A is like this. So I show you a lot of the chords that I think about for color and things like that. So you can check that out. If you can't find it, just email me or talk to me, and I'll write your email down and maybe send it to you if I don't forget. But that goes through and shows you like the chords that I love to use, like in the key of C. Like, and there are, you know, there are kind of keys or kind of chord families that are favorites of mine, and ones that I, you know, like I never really liked the key of like A shapes that much. It just felt like, you know. But I found things that, you know, this drone sort of shape works well if you're just really needing to do some texture stuff. But for the key of E, you know, how I thicken up my C, how I get away from that F or this F, wrapping your thumb around, opening up strings. This is my favorite, one of my favorite open voicings, F, this F with some extra notes added. And these are the chords I go to for like playing behind prayers and stuff you were asking. Yeah, like an F over A with an added second, a major seventh. You don't have to know all that, but just like find these sounds so that when you're asked to do something, when you're coming up with an arrangement, you can go, you have these available to you, and you say, I want this sound, I want that sound, I want that sound. So, you know, A minor, obviously, we have that, we have... if you know Dustin Kendrew's Rejoice, that tune, on the second verse, you know, it's capoed somewhere else, but on the second verse he goes up to this kind of chord while the rest of the band is playing, and it's, you become like a textural thing rather than I have to play every single chord change and stuff. And so it's kind of A minor-ish, but just these ideas so that you can take like C, F, G, and you can change it to be like, instead of just, you know, that kind of thing. So does that make sense? Chord families, you think in these, you need to think in like categories of big chords, like in the key of G, the color chords that I can use for picking and stuff that maybe don't work well for strumming. And these are all written down in this packet. Key of C, strategy for that, key of A, key of G, key of E, and key of D. So, and then thinking of textures, I sort of talked about that as well. Strumming, big, light, certain voicings will lend themselves to some of these ideas. Categories like big, small, colorful, drone sounds. Someone was asking me about Irish music because I do some traditional Irish stuff too. And there's some great things you can learn. Just some creative voicings that you can grab from like anywhere. It's so good stuff. And have different categories for your playing and a strategy for that, because as you come to a song, you know, often we want like, I want like this new big idea, and we probably have something like that, but it's often attention to the details in these little things that's going to help you create meaningful parts, crafting an idea and saying, okay, what are we doing here? Who's playing here? Piano's doing that. I'm going to do these type of things. Or a way to increase the effectiveness of your playing by 100% without practicing is just to stop playing. Not forever, but just for that part of the song. There's just times that you don't need to play. Someone else is carrying it, and maybe you just come in with... There are places for all that. And oftentimes we think, I gotta be doing something. I'm here, I'm standing here, I'm doing nothing, I need to be adding something, and you don't. Just listen to like the whole, you know, have a strategy for your song and listen to that. In point two, kind of developing this melodic sense, it kind of goes hand in hand with this sort of chord families. Does it make sense that the C, A, G, E, and D kind of keys, to not use the word quite correctly, have very different sounds and personalities and tricks? With E shapes and stuff, the G doesn't sound like that. And so all of the chords that you play have melodies. And even, to, you know, we think we're just like strumming, right? I just strum. I just, you know, it's just that with some, you know, some notes and stuff. But no, everything you do, whether you're doing kind of a drone thing on top, whether you choose to do that or you go... ways of playing in G that sound pretty different. So just realize everything you do in a chord has a melodic kind of feel to it, and that's important for you to do and to think about. So just kind of being aware of that is a huge part of the battle. Now, here's where we're going to put a bunch of these ideas together in a thoughtful use of a capo. Some people consider like a capo cheating. You get that from other musicians, like, oh, I cheated a capo. Move it up and play in G. Yeah, and that could be, you know, maybe you want to like grow a little bit, and it's not like you just know how to play in the key of G and you just move that up in the neck. And you know, you're up here. but you know, you could use it like that, but you can use a capo very intelligently. And this is one of the things where I think the acoustic guitar shines and would be something for all of us to aspire to. And that would be really thoughtfully using a capo and using these caged families to get the specific sound we want for any particular song, to go with another guitarist if we have a second guitarist and not be doing the same thing in the same place. Or you just know that, I'll talk about like cut capo and a little bit of emulating open tunings and stuff. I just knew we were doing Sinfield's version of Jesus on My Cross Have Taken. And I thought, what am I going to do for this song? I want something kind of different. I want something that suits the feel that I'm going for. And I knew immediately in your catalog of ideas, it's just like, you know, if you have a wardrobe of clothes, you know, for this thing, I'm going to wear that. It's kind of the same thing with your music. You think, for this thing, I want this sound. And I knew that by doing this little capo setup, it's not wild and crazy. But it just has an open feel. It had some of the little, like, you know, hammer on things that would sound very different if I were just to go like this. It just doesn't sound the same. And so I knew to get that sound, I would go for that. And each of these caged families have that kind of feel to them as well. So you've probably noticed that, some of you are probably pretty good at this, that you can see a song in a key. Well, for B flat, you're going to have some capo somewhere you're going to use. Probably capo 3G. If you capo 1 A shapes, consider capo 3 G shapes. But you're going to have some sort of capo strategy for this thing. And you do that whether you're good at it or not. You get a chart, you know, or your poor worship leader has to hand you a G chart, capo 4 or something like that. I'm happy to serve you that way and make one. I do it all the time. But that kind of locks you into, like, I got to play G. And so when I look at a song, here's kind of what I'm going for. When I look at a chart, when I look at a song, how long do we go to? 2 o'clock? I think so. When you look at a song, I immediately think, song's in the key of C. What do I want this to sound like? What sort of things do I want to do with this song? And I have 2, 3, or maybe even 4 options for any one song. And that's because with this caged idea, it's not only that these are the worlds we live in for the key of C or the key of A or the key of E or the key of D. It's not just that those are the worlds we live in capo 2 because they're open voicings on the guitar and they sound good. It's that this caged idea is also the order that these voicings move up the neck. So if you know that you can capo here, or you know that you can capo like, okay, see, I can also capo 5 and play in G shapes. And I have some guides for this on the website too, because, you know, I can't work with you each individually right now. Although if you want to catch me in the hall, we can talk about this. I'm happy to. It's also the order that these things move up the neck. These voicings move up the neck. These chords move up the neck. So in the key of C, this is kind of like a matrix moment where you realize that's a C, but that shape doesn't belong to C. That is only C because the notes around there make C with that shape. If we had a guitar that started right here, we'd all think of an A shape as a C, if that makes sense. All of these shapes are movable. They don't belong to anyone. They can be any chord you want to. So in this cage scheme, it's the order that they move up the neck. C, then the next version of C up the neck would be an A shape. What's the next one? C, think of the word, caged. C-A-G, then E, then D. If I'm in the key of G, where am I in the word? I'm in the middle, C-A-G, E-D. And these are not, I mean, you know, thinking about maybe new things for you or maybe a new way to practice them, but these are not, it's not like rocket science stuff, but it's something worth doing. Here's your G shape. You're in the middle of the word cage, C-A-G-E-D. What's the next voicing of a G up the neck? E, and then a D, and then a C, and then an A, then a G, and it keeps going until you run out of frets, or it's not practical anymore. What about if we're in a non-caged key? What if we're in like E-flat or something? Or let's think about this one. This is an easy one. What if we're in the key of F? What's the first version of some F chord down here? You'd probably go to that. And that is really, that's an E shape, just moved up. That's like an E-shaped bar chord that moves all around. So that's the first shape for the key of F, just way down there. Capo 1 probably, you do that. So what's the next version of an F chord going up the neck? Yeah, we're just in C, A, G, E. The next one would be a D, then a C, then an A, then a G, and then an E, and so on. And all my students at the university at the end of the semester had to go through, I call it the caged sequence. In about 10 seconds, I would just give you, they had to practice all 12 keys, and you should too. and they just had to, I would give them like A flat, and say, okay, A flat, G, E, D, C, A, G, okay, B major, okay, B, G, going through things like that, and just being able to do this so that it's available to you. Often, in, like I mentioned, sort of the, kind of like in a, have the expectations of sort of like studio level musicians here, with not a lot of preparation. When you're coming up with these ideas, like how we speak, we improv like mad when we're talking. when you're coming up with stuff like this, it comes from the overflow of your preparation, and you're going to get as much as you put into it. So pour into this well, even if it doesn't feel like you can do new stuff tomorrow. You know, a week from now, a couple months from now, next year. I had someone come up to me. I don't think they're in this class. I had someone come up to me and say, the session that you did 2 years ago that I was in totally changed the way I'm playing. But that doesn't, you know, that's encouraging to hear, but it doesn't mean a lot if you don't put the time in. We'll talk a little bit about a practice strategy and things like that. And this isn't like a take over your life. Like, I have a job. I just volunteer doing this. I have children. You know, things like that. I don't expect you to go back and like practice, you know, 8 hours a day for Sunday. But taking some of these ideas and becoming... Have any of you read Howard Best's Music Through the Eyes of Faith? This is amazing. The chapter on excellence is so encouraging and fantastic. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But okay, so do you get the idea, just the idea, the conception, that caged flow, C-A-G-E-D, is the worlds that you live in, and it's also the order that they move up the neck? Is that, like, conceptually good? Do you have a question? Because if you have a question, someone else probably has a question, too. And don't feel bashful. Yeah. PatrickAndersonGuitar.com, and just go to the blog on there, and there's a ton of stuff there. It's meant to be follow-up stuff. I created the packet just with the idea that an hour and 15 minutes with however many people are here, this is a big class, is not adequate time to speak to all of your needs and to help you where you are. So the packet was for that, but then the blog was for that more. And again, email me if you have questions. All right, so when I approach a song, let's say we have a song that's C, F, C, F, C, F. I think immediately, what do I want that to sound like? This can be pretty good. And do some of you know about the whole, like, understanding a chord progression, like 1-4-5-6? Okay. Some people do. Some people don't. And this might seem like, oh, theory moment. And I'm not going to go into this. Just know that the chords you play take on number names, and you can talk about... you can talk about chord progressions in terms of numbers. So, like, we're going to do like 1-4-1-4 on this, and you can translate that's a chord progression in any key. And I have a blog post on this, understanding chord progressions, which a short little page thing will explain this hopefully very beautifully for you. And I'm happy to talk about it a little bit more afterwards. But again, just kind of giving you the vision for the possibility of something you can do here. And then providing tools afterwards with getting in touch with me, checking out the blog, things like that, or questions that you would have right now. But PatrickAndersonGuitar.com, check out the blog. So I get a song that's in the key of C. It's C, F, C, F, C, F forever. If you know the theory behind that, that's 1-4-1-4-1-4. And so I immediately think, well, you know, I could do that. Maybe there's some picking things I like. I have big chords for C. I have colorful chords for C. But maybe I could also do, does anyone have a guitar here? Anyone have a guitar? Yeah, why don't you, can you be my, like, other guitar guy here? Yeah, if you could just play, like, C, F, C, F with me. You know, I can take, and I can think now, as if I'm playing in the fake key of A, it looks like A to me. Now I'll play A, D, A, D. And so just, like, strum in C. Now let's go to F. And go to F. I have some other Fs for you. And go back to C. Yeah, I would get tired doing that too. Now, if you're going for the Jack Johnson thing, bar chords are what you want. It's voicings. It's all about voicings, the right word for the moment. But you could probably hear a little bit of, like, the combination of the guitars. Now you do, play again. Let's go like C, F, C, F. Two. And now I'm playing as if I was in G, but move so that it is C. And there's a blend, if you can hear it a little bit, there's a blend between the instruments. I could be a little bit ambitious and try, you know, E you think of as going like this, but you can stick in like one area with it too. Try it again. Thank you. far away from him, and we're sort of combining the sounds a little differently, that would be one reason why you'd want to do something like this and get good at just looking at a chart in C and reducing that to numbers, and it's actually really easy. In fact, somebody time me. I'll give you the 30-second version. In a scale, the key of C, your notes take on numbers, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, and then it starts over. C is 1, D is 2, E is 3, F is 4, G is 5, A is 6, B is 7. Your chords take on the same numbers. So when you're playing in the key of C, and you play a C chord, it's the what chord? The 1. What's the D minor? 2. E minor. F is 4. G is 5, and so on. And how often in the key of C do you play C, F, G, A minor? Every single time. That's 1, 4, 5. You're going to play 1, 4, 5, 6, and sometimes 2 in like every song you do. And not just this style, just pop music in general. There are ways to get out of that and things you can do, but that's basically how chords work with numbers. Check out the blog post for like a follow-up on that, because that was the short 30-second version, hopefully. But now I can also think like this. I want to do a particular sound for, I'm the only guitarist, and I want to do this thing that I know I can do in G, and I just know that I can do like, I know I can get that voicing with those shapes. And so I'll use that when I don't have to, when there's not another guitar player. So I just, you know, grab that sound and put it there. So think about this. Think about the word caged. And again, if you have questions at any point, raise your hands. Think about the word caged. If I have a song in the key of C, what are the next couple shapes that'll work for me? C, A, G. E's getting a little high. What about if I'm in the key of G? What are the next immediate shapes that'll work up the neck? E, so I'm in C, A, G, E, D, and then C again, probably. The next two or three will always work for you. And so you have those colors you can apply to any song. Question?
Yeah, when you're talking about the different voicings, do you generally always use the capo, or do you ever have instances where you're going to still be uncapo, but you want to play those voicings higher up?
If you have some mad barring skills, you know, and you know that you can get that, you know that you can get that sound, but that's, you know, it's a lot to ask for. And again, capos get a bad rap, but they can be a hugely and a very intelligent, creative tool for you to get the particular sound that you want, or react within a band circumstance where you get a different sound away from the keyboard player or away from the other guitar player, you know, and make these creative choices. So did that answer your question?
Well, I just didn't know if there was ever any reason that you found it necessary not to use a capo when you're looking for those.
What you're going often for in using a capo is retaining kind of the open resonance and the chime that you get with some of the open strings and open voicings. And again, that's not a negative thing. It's just that that's how the guitar works. Once you play a note on the guitar, it starts to die. Some people classify it as a percussion instrument because, you know, just like a piano strikes a hammer, some people call a piano a percussive instrument, like technically in the orchestration books. And so you often have to do some sleight of hand or sleight of sound to make it sound like you're sustaining and moving around and stuff. And so I would tend to rely on a capo when I want open ringing sounds. I would even use it on an electric if I wanted to use it specifically on an electric. Like this morning, I threw it on for part of one song just because I wanted to do some open string stuff in a key that didn't have any open string. So I just knew I could grab it by doing this. And so again, you know, if you're doing that kind of percussive stuff, it's going to be a bar chord because you can stop the strings. If you want, and this is how I might play behind like a prayer or something, very simply, just G. Just open ringing sounds. You just want it to sustain, and you want to not be massively fatigued while you're, you know, there's some great studies like for guitar, more kind of classical, that are meant to ruin you. So it's like, you know, an entire couple minutes of bar chord with melody notes and stuff like that. And you can, you know, it's just, there's just a particular sound that's ringing. I've heard electric players say, oh, I would never use a capo, that's cheating and stuff. But if you want a particular sound, capo up high, get this ringing that you wouldn't be able to sustain without the capo in the same kind of way, or have as many fingers to do other stuff. So it's just, it really is an intelligent tool for you to use. So does that kind of make sense? You have this cage sequence that goes up the neck. You live in these families. Get to know them. Get to know the big chords. Get to know the colorful chords. And if you want me to play more examples, I can, of just the ones that are my favorites. But that's all in the packet as well. Like, these are the ones I love for C. Here's ones I love for G. And I'm constantly finding new ones. Also, there's the whole cut capo strategy. I don't know how many of you use that. And just a word about capos for a second. I know a lot of people love the G7 capos, and I think they're probably great capos. They're kind of expensive. These Kaisers, maybe get a better app. I don't know. They're great. They're about 20-something. They're really fast. And what you can do that's really cool is you can double them as a cut capo and turn them upside down and only cover part of the strings. And if you're doing that, this comes out of like necessity sometimes, and thinking, how can I get this sound in a song? What if I turn the cut capo around and I have it cover an A chord, that's now open G tuning. Whereas this other one kind of emulates dadgad open tuning. But let me just give you a sense of this. And I played it a little bit with the Jesus on My Cross Have Taken. But this, again, you're just developing like a palette of color that you'll go to for any song. And remember that any song you go to, think of the word caged, has at least two or three different voicings up the neck you can play it in. They have different tricks, colors, big chords, drone chords, finger-picking chords, and stuff like that, hammer-ons and things, and this is one of them. And I hope that every one of you get this. And there's a cut capo page, too, in the packet. Usually when we play in the key of D, you get... You just have to avoid that note because, you know, it's that note. But this opens up that for you, which is nice, but why not do this? Why not do that? That even works. Sometimes if you have like a sus chord you need to play, you can really like turn pages with that. But this just opens it up to this really beautiful... It's like an open tuning where you can do almost anything and it sounds good. You know, I even used this recently. If you know that Hillsong tune, This I Believe, has that piano intro that's really nice. And do you remember me saying that all our piano players graduated? If any of you are from the Daytona area. And I was thinking, okay, what do we... Not that you can't just strum the opening of a song, and that's kind of the mark of a good song, is that you can rearrange it a little bit, and it doesn't have to be always gigantic. But I thought, okay, with this, I know I can do that, so what if I do... Who needs piano? Want to get to the big strumming. Whatever. But that sounds, you know, it's good. It works well. And it just, you would probably agree that has a unique sound to it, just that structure there. Well, with two capos, and this is an actual, like, produced cut capo or partial capo, they call them, it has a little cutout so that you're not hitting the strings. When you're taking your normal Kaiser capo and you're turning it upside down, it takes, you have to actually practice these things, not touching, not doing this. Basically, what you're doing is not covering the sixth string, the second string, and the first string. Those are open. Those are open, and that emulates actually dadgad tuning. And you could do open tunings. We talked about this in the intensive. Once you do an open tuning, you're in that open tuning, unless you have another guitar. So this can be a quick way to emulate dadgad. And now you have the key of F like that. you have the key of G. I mean, G usually sounds good, but if I want these particular tricks, this is the key of G. You know, whatever you want to do. It has a different sound than the normal key of G strumming, which is also awesome. Oh, yeah. Who do I want to block? I'll put it over.
Do you cut your own capo?
No. No, I do not. They sell them. I mean, you could if you're good at that kind of thing. I just would waste a capo. but do you see how, you now you memorize. You know, we do these things almost every week. Every week, you're just putting on a new layer of remembering something. And it might click after a month or like half a year. You're like, oh, yeah, I've been doing this. And it just, you know, it just kind of builds and builds and builds. And you'll just start to remember this stuff. Even, you know, just think if you like practiced it 10 minutes, a couple times a week, intentional about it, even better. But I can have this in E is where, this is kind of like a tricky capo 2 for E, thinking in D shapes. And so I'm in E there. I could go F. I could go G, A. I was going to play one of our Enfield tunes, but I forgot how it goes. I did cut capo stuff, and I've used this a ton. That's pretty high up on the neck, but it still has, like, you know, maybe a usable sound. Maybe B flat would be better. But I'll think about that as I'm approaching any song. And again, this isn't like out of bounds for anybody in here. It's just what we do. It's where we live. Just realize that we live in like C, A, G, E, and D land for open voicings that sound good. Even if you're doing some weird voicing up the neck, it comes from one of those. And that's the order that it moves up the neck. And you already do that with a capo. Just realize that it's happening and kind of own it a little bit more. And you'll have just creative tools, you know, at your disposal with the cut capo stuff. Also, you can take this cut capo and turn it around the other way. And this emulates an open G tuning. And I mentioned this in the other class quickly, but I got this, again, it's like necessity is the mother of invention. Trying to do, I think it was one of the Christmas songs off the Sovereign Grace album, which is an excellent, excellent album. God Made Low, if you know that song. It had this like drony sort of sound at the beginning. It had this rising line, and I thought, you know, how do I get that sound? Because we don't have like that same setup or something. I thought, well, I could do this, and now this favors G. But I can start to. Do like this. That's really it favors G. This is like capo 2, so it's actually in the key of A. But doing like a so just being creative and getting these open ringing sounds. And Snow, you add those two, because now I have A, I have B flat, which we played a lot, B, C, what's that for C? D, which is usable. And so you think about, okay, I have all these. For any one song that you play, you have like three or four, maybe even five options for sounding very different on it. Does that make sense? This is something that we should all own as acoustic players, and that, you know, if I can work on it and get stuff out of it, I know that everyone else can. And we can all teach each other stuff with this. It is a Kaiser capo, yeah. Yeah.
Is Kaiser the man factor?
Yeah, other people, I know G7 makes one. I don't know if it's as quick as this. Yeah, and I just want something that's fast, because when you're leading and you have 1.3 seconds to start the next song while the sustain from the piano is dying off, and that's sort of like the covering the lines of changing the song for you. You don't have a lot of time to unscrew something and, you know, do all sorts. So you need something fast. I've used one of those spider capos a little bit too, and that is not a quick capo. Just so you know, it's a very cool capo, but it's not a quick capo. Okay, so that's kind of that's a big idea. So any one song, we can approach it with 4 or 5 different sounds even. Are there any questions on that? And that's where I would go with the 2-guitar thing. And I would use one. That's where I would go with really any song and think, what's the best, what's the sound that I want? And I guarantee, like, every one of you have an opinion of, like, how G sounds and things you like to do and little hammer-on tricks you've gathered over the years and stuff. Or E or D or whatever. So just know that you can move that around. And there's some resources on the blog for you as well as us talking about here. Happy to answer any questions, too. Yeah. In a sense, when you have, it's like you have a safety net. So you can think, like when you do cut, like normal cut capo on this side, kind of as if you're thinking in the key of E, sort of like in D shapes on the 2nd fret, you can just play full on D, full D chords with all the notes and Gs, but you're not taking advantage of like the safety net back here, open strings and stuff. And so, you know, I could do that kind of a thing. Sometimes, that's kind of cool. It's not maybe the note I'd want in the bottom of that, but you could do that, but why not start to create some new shapes? Like, this is my new G. Or that. Or this. Or that. I don't know. There's a lot of different versions of it you can make up. And this is you just experimenting and kind of approaching what you're doing with just a willingness to like pick up something new. And that's how you do it. You carve these ideas out. They don't come to you by magic in a dream. Maybe they do sometimes, but not usually. You carve out these ideas. I use the analogy a lot. It's music is like digging a ditch. You get as much ditch as you dig, and you get as much out of this as you're going to put into it. but just know that this is the way the acoustic works. You're doing a lot of it, but now kind of sort of subdue this idea. It wasn't really the word I was looking for, but you know, kind of get a hold of this idea so that it can be used for you and stuff. So 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 options with any one song. That's really, does that seem like it's cheating with a capo? No, you're using capo like a capo ninja. And so, yeah, that's where it gets into it. It does help because now you do have the thing. And I know someone's probably thinking it. Well, if I'm playing capo on the neck somewhere else, how do I know what chords I'm playing? Because you're looking at something in the key of G on the chart, and now you're playing as if you're in the key of C. And that's where that number system helps so much. And did it kind of make sense as I just threw it out there? Notes in a scale get numbers. The chords get numbers. In the key of E, what's the one chord?
E.
In the key of B, what's the one chord? And you can use your fingers to count. In the key of E, what's the 4 chord? E, F, G, A. Some kind of A. So you can see if that makes sense right now. Spend a little bit more time with it. Check out the blog post, and you will have no problem with that at all. And if you do, email me, and I'll be happy to explain a little bit. Okay, anything with that whole scheme, that's how I approach every song, and that is such a creative tool for you. You're doing half of it anyways, but now like own it and kind of get into it and explore these voicings and find new ones in the key of C and the key of A and the whatever. Anything more you want to talk about with that or see or hear? Yeah.
I was just kind of curious. Do you play any songs where you do key modulations to different keys within the song?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Then what do you do like with a capo with that? I've done different things. There was one song where we had like a drop D, which is just another simple thing you can do. I can tune. That messes up your chords though. The cut capo thing preserves the tuning of the guitar, and so you can go up the neck and keep your own chords. Like when I do cut capo right here in E, I can still play like that power chord E up there and it works. But yeah, there was one song that we were doing that was in this that I had to during the big modulation. I think I even kept this right here where it's not going to cover anything. So I could be like band playing. That's really what I did in live. that's not ideal because you hear that stuff. But if the band's covering it enough, or you can mute it kind of, you could probably do that a little bit more gracefully. I will think, though, as you're going often like a whole step, I will think, okay, C to D. That's something that you could do on a capo. Sometimes it works, like G to A, C to D, D to E, where it goes up a whole step. You're able to do that. So if you're in the key of C, all of a sudden you go to like, you know, and it works still with the capo. Sometimes it'll go to like a key that you don't love to play in, like the shapes you don't love to play in, like A or something like that. But in that case, I might do it, I might go to the new key and end up here. And then maybe I find a moment where I can just, you know, fix the capo to where I want it or something like that. I had this last week, we had a couple songs in a row where I knew I wanted to do cut capo the first song, but then the next song was capo 2 G shape, so I put that on the same fret behind it, so that I knew for another song I could do that, and it would be, you know, set. That's pretty rare, like capo orchestration. But amaze your friends. Sometimes, yeah, you just have to kind of plan that stuff out. And sometimes this is ditching the capo and like, because you have no time, you're playing, you just drop it on the floor and go back to doing something else or whatever your, you know, the next chord is. So does that conceptually make sense, that idea that you have these voicings available for you and these different color kind of palettes for every single song that you approach? And that's such a powerful creative kind of tool and stuff. So if there are no more questions on that, we can kind of keep moving.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you're learning a song, you know, it doesn't matter who it is, it has an interesting guitar part. You can take a few minutes and do some of the techniques you talked about, and you can find out lots of times exactly the way they have.
Yeah.
Cut capo, open tuning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, transcribing stuff and listening. There's a book called Steal Like an Artist. You just collect ideas. So absolutely. Listening and listen. We were talking about this at lunch. Oftentimes we listen for entertainment. We think that's kind of what music is for. But as a musician, listen for education. Listen to grab ideas. You know, when I was teaching my theory classes, I would want to bring often in pop examples that showed some chord progression that I thought was interesting or unusual that we could learn from. And so I just keep the radio on top 40 stuff, and something would come on and I would write down, that one has a flat 7 in the chorus, or this uses a minor 4, something like the orchestration is cool for that, or the instrumentation or whatever. And so think educationally about the music and kind of mine the songs that you're listening to and the sounds that you like. You're not going to do everything. You know, you might check out the packet and the chords. You'd be like, I like that. I don't like that chord very much. Where it might be my favorite chord. Just the way you put things together, this is how you develop a language. This is how you develop an opinion about what you like. So find the stuff you like, figure it out, and that becomes yours. Because they didn't make it up either. Yeah, it's a good point. All right, again, feel free with questions and stuff. I put some other things in here just with, you know, and musicality and time and feel, that is a huge thing. And just a little tiny bit, has anybody here done like any sort of producing type of stuff? Any of you have like Pro Tools or Logic or Ableton or something? If you're doing that, you're able to see often, you're often recording like to a click track or something. It's like a metronome that plays in your ear. How many of you use a click on Sunday mornings? Okay, it could be helpful. You're playing to that, and have you ever had the experience of realizing that you were, or someone else claiming that you might be rushing, starting a song, they're like, that's too fast, or like, you know, slow down. If you're doing a recording thing, like, let's say, try that again, just sit back a little bit on the beat this time, and do this kind of thing. We often tend to rush, and this idea of really listening to percussion, or having this internal kind of beat, going so that you really relax on the beat. When I'm thinking of something like that, let's see if I can keep that while I play. When we do just a downstrum kind of brush, you don't necessarily want to just attack it like, Because if I looked at how that lined up, like in a recording track, I would see like the beat of the click, and I would probably be like in front of it a little bit. I would probably be rushing a little bit. And you add that up over time, you're constantly playing in front of the beat or on top of the beat, and it sounds like rushing. All you have to do is think of playing around the beat a little bit more. It wasn't like, bam, I'm not a percussion instrument. I'm just sort of doing this. Maybe the top notes hit the beat. I should do a faster chord progression. You know, it's sort of around it a little bit more. And if you had like a metronome going, all you have to do that would often fix that is just think about relaxing on the beat and not trying to play it as if you're playing like a metronomic study of. Just relax on that beat, and that's, you know, something that we guitarists tend to do a lot is just really rushing. So just be aware of playing like, they call it playing like behind the beat, playing on the back of the beat a little bit, just sort of relaxing on that. And again, this isn't like kind of a thing, but this is the stuff that are the details that make you a better player. Even like the feel of your strum, you can do so much with a pick. Where you kind of scoop on the guitar, the attack of your pick. If I'm playing, sometimes it works out, even though I know a ton of I can capo anywhere and transpose just fine. Sometimes it works out for whatever reason that I have to stay here and the other guitarist has to stay there too. And in that case, you can like think of your strum as like an arc like that. And think of like this is the plane of the strings. First string, big fat sixth string. I can scoop more towards the bass. I can scoot more towards the treble, towards the middle. I can pull out notes like that. I can do something like... or I'm emphasizing the top. And it's just kind of where you just have to practice getting used to feeling hitting the top strings, hitting the bass strings. That's even how I'll kind of pull out hammer-on sometimes. You don't have to be so careful about, I need to pick that one note. You just go for that zone. And actually, doing a little bit of bluegrass will help your guitar playing. Your flat picking, but also just like getting these bass lines. Okay, so pick attack, your strumming, the type of pick you use, the weight of your pick. Who loves to use like heavy picks in strumming? How often do you break strings during the year? I know it happens. Yeah.
Like a graphic pick or a view pick or something?
Yeah, whatever. You know, yeah, you know, with a heavy pick, oftentimes with a thicker pick, you get a little bit of a warmer tone. But you also have the danger of digging in too hard and breaking strings. With a really, really light pick, it has like a crisper sound in some. It just has a different type of sound, just the way it hits the strings. And just to have like a little collection of picks that I know if I kind of want to lean a little bit more this way, I'm going to do this. Or if I have something where I know I need to pick more with my pick and pull out more detail, I'll use a stiffer. This is just one of the simple, cheap Dunlops. I just love those. They have the black kinds, which are the heavier kinds, the gray ones, the lighter gray ones, and they just get progressively lighter and thinner. But different sounds come from using different styles of picks, and you should try that out. Some might be better for strumming, some might be better for pulling out detail. Maybe you're a heavy pick guy all the time, and if you're careful about it, that can really work. But and again, if you have questions around any of this, shoot your hand up, else I'm going to assume that nobody does. Yeah. 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 That's a great question. I alluded to that a little bit at the beginning where you might be, at Cedarville when I was a prof, a friend of mine led the gospel choir there, which was fantastic. And they had a big band and a gigantic choir, and it was just like volume and energy. And he asked me to do like an acoustic version of one song with him, some picking stuff. And he said, oh, just sit in with us and play. And I thought, okay, there's like two electric players, couple keyboard players, drums, bass, about 150, you know, at least person choir, plus like probably six people on mics and things. So this is where you can wonder, like, why am I here right now? I'm just kind of ornamental. That's where, in fact, for that, I decided, since this song was in B, I thought, well, what can I do in B? I could do G shapes, that's fine. But what I tend to think about more in that is my intricacies are going to get lost. Like, they're not going to hear my little, you know, hammer-ons and stuff like that. And it might not be that type of a song. But what you do hear is you become more of a textural role, and you do hear more of that kind of thing. And so I might go to, like, I think in the key of B, I actually went to... it's kind of out of tune. Let me see if it's a little better here. I knew I could go to like this high sort of drone chord. It's like a power chord shape up here. It's nothing like having to tune in front of a bunch of people watching you. Okay, that's better. I knew that when the song got just gigantic, and I would go to more of a textural role. So I chose to do something like this. And I knew this was in the key of A for right now. I could capo and it would be in B. But this was the key of A. I was just doing this high sort of, so that you really just heard. That's the four chord. You can hear the chord changes in there, but it has just like this jing, jing, jing kind of high sort of texture thing. Or, you know, I might do the same thing like in the key of with these E chords and do... or come up with a little line like... So you're thinking more as a textural part instead of, like, I have to drive the rhythm, because you could not be there and it could be fine. But what can you add now that would be something that could add to the fullness of it? So I tend to go to more drone stuff. And you can pull that out of some keys naturally, like G. I'll sometimes just mostly emphasize these top strings if it's the big, gigantic part and I'm not, like, leading it. And I'm actually strumming a little bit more. Every strumming pattern you do comes from this. This is like the piece of granite that you sculpt from, in a sense. And so this kind of informs your ups and downs, too. I find a lot of students would get, guitar players would get stuck in sort of like this, the wrong directions, but the right rhythm and stuff. And so I lean towards filling it in more, just with, and grabbing a bass note just for my own sake, not that anyone else would hear it, but it just adds kind of that drone sort of power texture sort of sound. That's what I tend to go towards when it's, you know, massively gigantic and stuff. And voicings that lend themselves kind of to that kind of, that sort of thing. So E, you know, you can do. You can play with these octave things, which are kind of cool. But I'm still doing like a drone thing. So I tend to go to like textures, thinking in textures, like what can be heard and what will add to the fullness. And that's not going to be, well, it could be like picking if you really are able to boost it. Like a... But I'm still doing a drone thing. So I guess my answer is drone textures for that. But yeah. I don't know if that kind of answered it, but that's what I do. A little bit about these few last points, and then we'll see if we have just a little bit more time for questions. I'm happy to spend doing. Sort of a practice strategy. You're thinking, great, this is awesome, but I'm really busy and I'm tired and I work long hours and I have small children, or I work two jobs or something like that. This isn't my main thing. I encourage you to check out this book by Harold Best, called Music Through the Eyes of Faith. It's an excellent book. It's a little bit more philosophical. It's a Christian. It's a standard kind of in this realm. But he talks about the idea of excellence and does a beautiful look through Philippians that I won't do right now, but just talks about it's the process of becoming better than you once were. And wherever you are right now, with whatever your ability, you can take steps to not compare yourself to this or that, but to serve where you are well by taking some of these ideas and doing, until Christmas, I'm going to work on this idea of just trying to get this, like, really kind of understanding this cage sequence and exploring voicings. That's all I'm working on because I have other stuff to do. But you have like an intentionality and you're becoming, the process of becoming better than you once were. And I think that's the impetus on all of us in this situation. We have the example in the Psalm 33:3, talks about playing skillfully. As if that isn't enough, you know, you think about whether you eat, whether you drink, whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. And again, don't you feel sometimes there's like this expectation or lack of expectation on what we do musically and artistically as the church? Not that that's like the highest thing, but to accompany the gospel off a strong, beautiful foundation that exalts all the right things about God and just is on that strong foundation. God created beauty, didn't have to, but he created beauty in so many different expressions that we would do the best that we can with where we're at, just keep moving forward a little bit and a little bit. And every one of us can, and it's a joyful, like really exciting, fun thing to do as a musician. And it will never, ever end, no matter how good you get. It will never, ever end. So this idea of just pursuing excellence, but understanding like in an encouraging way, better than you once were, better than you were yesterday. You get some ideas here. What's useful? What are you going to work on? Without feeling condemnation, like, oh, I don't have time to do all this. Pick one new thing to learn in the next year, and that's fantastic. Just keep moving forward a little bit here. One thing you can really do in practicing this is reading. Taking the charts that you get for Sunday mornings, or taking the songs you know you usually use, and just take that as a practice and say, okay, this song is in G. What is that sequence, that cage thing? And I have this written out so that visually you can see it. You can see where it lines up on the frets in G, A, in all the caged keys. I'm just going to practice getting used to this idea. And again, I don't think again, but practicing a realistic strategy for getting better is just consistency over time. You're just doing little things over an amount of time. You don't have to compare yourself to anybody else, but just taking this, maybe reading through your charts, trying this, trying to read it, trying to look at writing the numbers out in different charts, trying to do it just by sight, finding new. What if I was doing this song more with like a delicate, sensitive, finger-picking sort of version? What voicings would I use? How would I do it? What if I was doing like, if I was playing in a big band, how would I do it with this, with the key of C? How would I do it with the key of A? G, E, D? Could I do a cut capo thing? What would be best? And you start developing all of these tricks and sort of a language for all this too. And I don't have a lot of time to talk about gear because if you just did this, you would be good. Sometimes we think, well, what kind of effects do I need for acoustic? The first answer is not really anything, because you can do a lot already with a pick and a capo. One thing that I really love is this. There's a new version of this. This is a DI, the thing that you plug into on Sunday mornings. This is just a fancier version of some of them. This is one. Gabe, the violin player, was using one of these too. This is the LR Bags. I love their stuff. Their pickups. Some of you may use like the Para DI, the brown box, or have seen that before. This is the Venue. I think there's a new one that just came out too. It has a great EQ. I have a bunch of guitars, and some of the acoustics I have are of lesser desirable quality, but I've been amazed with, you know, just a pickup in one of them that I can really shape a good sound with a pretty solid EQ here. One thing that's really nice is it has a muter tuner or a mute tuner button for you, so you can do that. It's really bright. But it has a boost also. So that solved the problem of like, can you turn me up for the picking part? You can just turn yourself up for the picking part. It's an adjustable 0 to 9 dB thing. That comes in really handy for like a little line solo or a little finger picking section or something like that. It has an effects loop too if you did want to add some effects, compression, chorus if you needed to, delay or whatever like that. If you really, for the only effects that I use for acoustic are sometimes reverb and delay if I had a solo. just because I don't want it to sound super dry. And that would be pretty rare that I used anything like that.
Is it Phantom powered? It is not.
The only downside in this one is that that particular one, the new one I think is Phantom powered, takes a battery or the wall wart. Yep. So I use that. There's a great, if you guys watch any like the guitar podcasts, there's one called That Pedal Show. Which is fantastic. It is so good. Mostly on electric stuff, but they did one recently about using an acoustic with effects and like why you might use overdrive on an acoustic. And it's a different context, but creative ideas, keep your mind open. You might, you know, find something. I think it's called That Pedal Show. It's by the Gig Rig people. They make some pretty amazing sort of things. Picks, we talked about picks. A tuner is a really key thing to have. Your church probably does. I have a couple of tuners that I just bought, little Boss pedals for the different guitarists that we use on stage. But I love that LR Venue because it gives you a little boost if you want it. It's great tone shaping sorts of things. You can plug effects. You're not running your acoustic through all these digital things. That's sort of time for us. Are there any questions? If you have to go, you can go. But if you want questions, you first.
Just an easy question. You said you have a busy life and kids.
Yeah.
What do I pay attention to
the guitar world? I'll listen a lot. Right now I'm trying to finish up a doctoral degree that I'm somewhat cynical about. But I'll listen a lot, transcribing stuff. I love that podcast, That Pedal Show. There are a number of even like Chasing Tone, Gear Talk. These are all like kind of a lot of the electric world, but just getting into gear and stuff. And they might talk about things like that too. So a lot of that. Checking the forums and stuff, checking out new gear and things, but listening and pulling out ideas. If you have more questions, feel free. If you want to come, you have one in the back. Yeah. When I'm pulling out notes? Yeah, no, you can, but it would be the difference of sounding like this. Or, I can't even do it. It sounds like too clean to me. Like, for what I guess I have in my head right now, I want sort of the other version. And what I'll do is just a scoop around the strings. Like, you'll hear it if I... For this hammer-on, I'm hitting. But I'll dig in right at that one spot and hit the strings after it, and it... You know, as you're strumming, you change chords and you just lift up your fingers and it doesn't sound bad. But for a second, I did this. But it's there for like a split second. And so you can get away with some stuff like that, hitting extra strings that you didn't mean to. Especially when, you know, if you're doing like a straight bluegrass thing, you might want to be a little bit more precise. But for this sort of thing, that's just good practice to just sort of scoop that area and not have to worry about like with exact precision I'm going to pick that one note only, because the other open strings kind of make it blend a little bit more too. Yeah. Anything else? Question?
How do we mesh this idea of excellence in what we're doing as our worship without being too performy or distracting the congregation with our cool instrumentation?
Yeah, you know, I think finding the right thing. Like, we recently did an arrangement of putting together, like, Blessed Be Your Name, which I don't often do, but I changed the chords and stuff and put it with It As Well and, like, mixed the two songs up and stuff. And we did more specific things throughout. But if you design it well, then it's functional as well in those parts and things. And I often think about this with a guitar solo. Like, why have a guitar solo? For me? Like, to show off or something like that. I obsess about, like, what am I going to say for this? How is it going to go from this, to lead here to there? Why don't we just read a verse that helps us sing this next part a little bit better instead? But it's being intentional about the parts you do. And just knowing, sometimes we feel bad about, I think, excelling in musical things, while always being gracious and encouraging, because we almost feel like you shouldn't be too good or something, or like you're being idolatrous by being too excellent or something. And it sometimes is a fine line, being in front of people and wanting like, hey, great job and stuff, or being too devastated when something didn't go like you wanted it to go or something. But, you know, scripturally we're told to play skillfully. So now we know that that's good. So now how to apply it to your situation in a way that's appropriate. I think intentionality, I think realizing that it's a good thing and realizing that it's not like a sort of a you moment. Oftentimes during like an instrumental section, we might have a solo, I'll put a verse up that goes with like part of the, you know, where we've come from in a song and where we're going. So it's just supporting like what we're doing in a congregational setting, because it's totally different in a, like a concert setting. But in a congregational sense, we're supporting that. And, you know, finding an appropriate arrangement. You might not do the craziest thing possible, but you can do some stuff that really support it beautifully. And it probably depends on where you are, too. Not that they're like, that I've given you like rules for something, but I think one, it's okay. It's okay to be excellent, which we sometimes, you know, feel like it's not maybe. And then finding appropriate ways to do it. And you'll probably know if like, ah, that was kind of distracting. Or this is really helpful, something. But I'd be curious if you found anything too. But anything else? They do use a click. Most of the time. Some songs I just don't feel like I need it, or that like, the band needs it. And then sometimes it doesn't work. On developing finger picking. Maybe shoot me an email with that, because we did that in the intensive section. And I have a sheet that will get you started if you haven't done something like that. But the quick is that your bass note, your thumb takes the bass notes. These fingers sit either, you know, very, like, first level, they sit on the front strings. You know, if someone might say, well, I can pick with two fingers. Well, you can walk with one foot, too, but it's easier with two. So, you know, use more fingers. And just start with, like, a simple extending pattern, reading through a chart, grabbing the bass note with your thumb. That's pretty simple, but it sounds good. Finger picking is just, it's just an amazing, it's something that this instrument does just phenomenally well. And then you can change it up, going backwards. Or mix it up. Leave a bass note out every other time. And that will start to get your fingers used to going to where they need to go, so that you can start to be more creative and just sort of, I don't think about the patterns that I do anymore. It's just kind of like, you know, you just come up with some stuff. But that's after doing it forever, like anything that you do in sports and life. Like, I don't know. I can't throw a frisbee, so. Anyways. Yeah. But there, email me. I have like a sheet for that and stuff. Yeah.
Is there any simplified resource for buying a guitar to just kind of survive?
Like a background?
Yeah.
You know, not that I know of. Other than, you know, you could take it. One thing you do with hymns in the first place, if you want to play them on guitar, is you simplify the chord progression. So you're not doing, you know, kind of a thing, because that just doesn't sound good on the guitar. You simplify it and see. That's just really great practice to see if you can pick out the melody. And you can do it in first position, and you have to carve it out. Like, okay, I do that for that. And one sort of tip there would be to play a little stronger with the finger that's playing the melody, or a little softer with the fingers that aren't. And that's just building, you know. To practice that, it can be hard, but you can take like a block chord and you can try to emphasize the thumb. Hear that note? Try to emphasize the ring finger, the middle finger, index finger. To get that awareness with every finger so that you can pull out more if you're playing it with, playing the melody. You want the melody to kind of sing out and stuff. But you can do a lot in first position, and that will be the gateway to you, you know, thinking, yeah, what if I did this and this? And you'll be like this solo guitarist, you know, without, you know, over the course of some years of just messing around with that. That can be really beautiful for like an offertory or something, even church communion, just to even like cut capo is great for that because it's so resonant and you can move around a little bit more. Or just simplify the chords. That was a pinky stretch. And you can sort of shape the melody a little bit so you're not doing like every single note, but they're like da da da, simplified a little bit. You can change the note for one part as you shift somewhere else, and it's forgivable. But yeah, that's great practice, really great practice in exploring voicings and thinking about reharmonizing and stuff like that. Yeah, it's just sort of carving that out. But yeah, anything else? Yeah.
That cage method, you were like moving the C up, for example.
Okay. Well, when I was moving up the neck, I was going through the sequence like C, A, G, and I would play the G like that because it's not everyone who hasn't played a lot of Bach can do that. E, so C, A, G, E, D. More bar chords, C, A, G, E, D. And starting over. So if I was in B flat, A, the C. Oh, that one around? Let's say if I'm in E. E, D, or sorry, E, D. You don't have to, what you're not doing is expected to like be able to strum a C like this and have it sound good. You're learning the spots. And I might do it like, I'll do it like this just because I can see the rest of it. I'll do it like this. I'll do it like just barring the first part and maybe doing like that much.